Welcome to Dispatches, the official podcast for the Journal of the American Revolution. The Journal of the American Revolution publishes weekly online at www.allthingsliberty.com. For the latest in research, reviews, and commentaries, America's most important history is available free of charge at the Journal of the American Revolution.
So in that sense, you know, Waldo's diary and poetry are not new. But I think, you know, he gives you a sense of some of the broader issues.
That's author and Journal of the American Revolution contributor David Price. And he'll be discussing the Valley Forge diary of Albigense Waldo. And he's our guest today. I'm Brady Kreitzer, and this is Dispatches. This episode is brought to you by The History List. Find your favorite way to celebrate the American Revolution here. Visit thehistorylist.com. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Dispatches. I'm your host, Brady Kreitzer. Today, our guest is Journal of the American Revolution contributor David Price, and he'll be discussing about the life and journal and poetry of Albigense Waldo. Most Americans probably don't know Waldo's name, but he had a front row seat for really what was one of the most trying moments of the American Revolution, the winter at Valley Forge. He leaves us a lot to think about, and David Price's new article really helps us see the highlights. So sit back, relax, and enjoy our interview with David Price. David Price, welcome back.
Thank you, Brady. It's good to be with you again.
David, you've been on the show many times before. Tell us a little bit about your background for those that might have missed you.
Sure. I'm the history buff who likes to write, as I describe myself. And I don't have any formal academic background in history. I don't have a degree in history. Even though I was bitten by the history bug at a very early age, I'll date myself when I was about 8, and my father took me to Gettysburg at the time of the Civil War bicentennial, and so I was hooked ever after. I really got into this, Rev War pursuits or revolting pursuits, shall we say. About 10 years ago, after I retired from my job with the state of New Jersey, and I started giving guided tours at Washington Crossing Historic Park. That's the PA version of the two sister parks at Washington Crossing, and more recently at Princeton Battlefield. In fact, I gave a tour there today in what was the inaugural 2024 tour that's sponsored by the Princeton Battlefield Society, and we had over 60 people. We had to break it up into two groups, so I'm very gratified that there's that kind of interest in doing that among the public at large. And so along the way, I, as an outgrowth of that, being a tour guide or historical interpreter, if you want to use the formal term, I began to pound the keyboard, and over the last 8 or 9 years, I guess, depending how I count it, I've written 4 books, and the 5th one is now in the can, and hopefully it'll be coming out early next year. And I believe this is the 10th article I've written for JAR. Now, this latest article about Dr. Waldo is kind of a departure from what's been my main focus. I've, which I guess is not surprising considering the what I've been doing the last 10 years in at Washington Crossing in Princeton. Most of what I've written about has related in some manner, shape, or form to the events of the so-called 10 Crucial Days campaign, and or people involved with that. That is the period in which Washington's army engaged in its, you know, legendary winter campaign. And I got interested in Waldo because I finally decided I have a book that I'm sure you're familiar with. I don't know if this is considered a classic, but it goes back a ways. Rebels and Redcoats, The American Revolution Through the Eyes of Those Who Fought and Lived It, by George Scheer and Hugh Rankin. And so this is one of those books that I used as a resource, you know, reference from time to time, but I never actually read through the whole thing cover to cover. And recently, fairly recently, I finally did that. And in the course of doing so, in the two chapters relating to Valley Forge, I came across some excerpts from Albigence Waldo's writings, both his diary and poetry. And, you know, I found it intriguing. The more I found out about him, the more, you know, I thought he was an interesting character and somebody worth writing about. So I floated that idea by Don, see what he thought of it. And he was on board with it, provided that it be more than just about his diary. So, because I guess, you know, he's obscured to the general public, but among hardcore Rev War buffs, probably a significant number of them are familiar, have some familiarity with his diary. So I wrote the article in such a way as to, although obviously it highlights the diary, I wanted to also include a fair amount of biographical data about Waldo, the man, and also include excerpts from his poetry, which I think very ably and creatively complements his diary, and then also include a few comments from, you know, a small number of individuals who, you know, shared the Valley Forge experience to a certain extent, one way or another, or at least were contemporaneous observers of what was going on there at the time, along with Waldo, to give readers a sense that his observations, although they were written, I think, in an inimitable style, both in prose and poetry, that his observations were corroborated by others, that what he was telling his readers today, was an accurate reflection of what life was like for Waldo and his fellow soldiers at Valley Forge in the winter of 77-78.
David, give us a summary of Waldo's service before Valley Forge.
Sure. Well, he first started out, he was a practicing physician prior to the revolution. He had, had what amounted to as much formal medical instruction or training as people that called themselves physicians, and I use the term loosely in an 18th century context, had. And he was practicing in his hometown of Pomfret, Connecticut, where he would live most of his life outside of service in the Revolution. So he left his wife and children to, as did, you know, obviously many a citizen soldier at the time. He first was serving as a clerk in a militia company from Woodstock, Connecticut. This is in 1775, and he was right after Lexington and Concord. And then shortly thereafter, he was commissioned as a surgeon's mate, which I guess would be the functional equivalent of a physician assistant today, in the 8th Connecticut Regiment under Colonel Jedediah Huntington. He was discharged in September 75 because of ill health. That's something that apparently plagued him throughout his, pretty much his whole adult life. You get a sense of that from his writings. And indeed, he was only 43 when he died. So in December of 76, the Connecticut Committee of War commissioned Waldo to be chief surgeon of an armed vessel named the Oliver Cromwell. But his friend, Colonel Huntington, convinced him to leave that that station or that post to join a newly the newly raised 1st Connecticut Regiment as the regimental surgeon. And Waldo obtained permission to do that. He joined the 1st Connecticut in early 77 as a regimental surgeon. And that regiment was assigned to a brigade led by now Brigadier General Jedediah Huntington, and was in Major General Alexander McDougall's division of Connecticut and Rhode Island soldiers. That regiment was raised largely in New London County, took the field in the spring of 77 at Peekskill, New York. Then after the Brandywine Creek engagement, was ordered by Washington to join up with the main army in Pennsylvania. They were engaged at Germantown in October as part of Nathaniel Greene's division. And subsequent to that, as the cold weather set in, Waldo would begin to record the his experience of camp life and what he observed among himself and his fellow soldiers in a series of day-by-day chronicles that began in November of 77, even before the Army got to Valley Forge, and would only cover a period of 2 months, but still, I think, you know, provides us with a fairly remarkable and certainly historically valuable window on the daily existence of the Continental soldiery at the time.
David, what do you think makes Waldo's diary so special?
Him. I think he was a special individual. He was clearly a man of many talents, certainly an educated man, a highly literate man, a doctor, a writer, a poet, apparently had some musical and artistic ability too. And I think it's for me, it's the obviously there are a lot of voluminous amount of correspondence that we have that sheds light on the Valley Forge encampment. In fact, I just started it. I haven't gotten too far into it, but the first in a series of 8 volumes, I think it is, that were edited by Joseph Lee Boyle, entitled Writings from the Valley Forge Encampment of the Continental Army, December 1777 to June 1978. So there's plenty of, primary source material out there for anyone who's interested, written by officers, who were in the Army encampment. But Waldo, I guess what appeals to me about his writing is the in the diary. I mean, in his poetry too. But the various, I guess I'd almost call it mood swings that you see throughout the course of his writing, and some of that, a lot of that, I guess, is related to what was happening in the camp at Valley Forge during the winter months, and how things started to improve as spring came on in terms of housing, as the soldiers, got out from under their tents and built their huts, as food became somewhat more available, as the Army started to, professionalize, so to speak, under the tutelage of Baron von Steuben, who, of course, was not a baron. But you sense in Waldo somebody who I think you sense his decency and his humanity, certainly his literary flair. You get a sense of his witty quality, his commitment to the cause, his admiration for the others with whom he served from Washington on down. And also, clearly this was someone who was very much in love with his wife and children. So you get a pretty full picture or sense of the man from his writings. And he has this literary flair about him, if you will, that is not, that makes, I think, his diary entries and his poetry more, not to, disparage anybody, the writings of anybody else, any other first-person accounts, but, to me that makes what he recorded special.
David, we have a day-by-day approach to Waldo's diary. What do you think we can learn about that?
He gives you the context for what's happening during the encampment, the struggles of the soldiers to survive, really, to cope, building their huts, learning to live on a very paltry diet, fire cake and water, essentially, and which he writes with a good deal of passion and animation about. But he also gets into some larger themes, I think, about what was happening in the war, and also, well, even beyond that, in a way that clearly exhibits his social conscience. So, for example, there's one letter in which he trying to define it here, but he writes very critically about the opinions expressed by the citizenry during the Army's encampment who didn't really understand what was happening with the Army at that point, had no idea of, what the challenges, the struggles they were dealing with, and didn't appreciate, what the soldiers were going through. So he took that opportunity to vigorously defend Washington and his fellow soldiers. And there's another diary entry, which I found especially intriguing, where he writes about a soldier who he was told was dying and was asked to see this man before he expired. By the time he got to the soldiers' quarters, he had passed on, but he was an Indian, a Native American. And in this diary entry, Waldo pays tribute to him, and as a very capable soldier, and also especially in view of how he, if I can quote from the letter, he says, Waldo writes, in reference to the deceased, he calls him an excellent soldier, and said he has served his country faithfully. He has fought for those very people who disinherited his forefathers. Having finished his pilgrimage, he was discharged from the war of life and death. His memory ought to be respected more than those rich ones who supply the world with nothing better than money and vice. So you get a sense of the I think, of his humanity and his social conscience, which, you know, was perhaps somewhat advanced for his time.
Could you describe some of his poetry for us?
Yes. So he, the poetry, or I should say the excerpts from his verse that I included in the article, I think complement the diary in the way that they offer us both a sense of who Waldo was and what he cared most about, but also, you know, what life was like in the encampment. For example, there's a rather lengthy verse that he wrote to his wife in April 1778, which I think has historical value chiefly because of his description of the hut in which he and his fellow soldiers live, which he goes into great length to describe, and really gives you a very you know, specific idea of you know, what the quarters in which they were lived their physical existence. And there's another poem in which he writes about the women in the camp, the wives, the washerwomen, and others. He writes about, well, the I guess conversations that soldiers would have at night, you know, in the privacy of their quarters, with their brethren, and the camaraderie that ensued from that. And then there's one diary entry which I found particularly interesting because I think it shed light on the something I mentioned before, the professionalization of the army that was occurring at this time via the training that was provided by von Steuben and the others whom he over time deputized to do this as well. And I'm not going to read the whole excerpt, but he does, I think he sort of gives us a window on that without mentioning von Steuben by name, but he talks about here squads in martial exercise, their whole brigades in order rise. With cautious steps, they march and wheel. Double form ranks, platoons at will. Columns on columns justly roll. Advance, retreat, or form one whole. So I found that particularly interesting myself.
David, what happens to Waldo after the war?
Right. Well, as many a soldier did, probably most soldiers at the time, he returned to his hometown, Pomfret, Connecticut. Actually, he resigned his commission in 1779 to really address his family's economic needs. They had become basically impoverished during the time he was away. He would have, I don't know how many of his children were born before the war, how many afterwards. He had 7 children by his first wife, Lydia Hurlburt Waldo, whom he had married in 1772. And they would have 4 sons and 3 daughters. And then Lydia died in 1785. And 2 years later, Waldo remarried. And he would have 2 daughters with his second wife, Lucy Cargill Waldo. So ultimately he had, 9 children. I can't count that high. Right. So he resumed his medical practice, but it became essentially a surgical practice, and entirely a surgical practice, really. He devoted himself to that specialty. We know from a series of day books that he kept in the mid to late 1780s, that recorded his surgical work, that he was engaged in a range of surgical accomplishments or interventions, I guess I should say, that would be considered, I think it's fair to say, quite remarkable for that time. These were brought to light, I think, by an article that was written by a Dr. Herbert Toms, an MD, about Waldo in a journal called the Annals of Medical History in 1928. And so some of what Waldo did, which he recorded in his day books, included such operations as amputations at the thigh, operating on cranial fractures, and cutting out goiters. And of course, he was doing this all without the benefit of anesthesia, or his patients being without the benefit of anesthesia. But, you know, this was not something that the average medical practitioner was doing at the time. So essentially, he devoted his professional life to that, and of course, his private life to his family. But he was also very active in the local Masonic Society, and you know, was an active member to the point where when he died in 1794, at not quite age 44, the local Masons erected a monument for him, where they, without reading the whole thing, they testified to the virtues, talents, and usefulness of their late worthy brother, and complimented him for, as they put it, attentively studying the works of God in the admirable frame of man. So that he rose to eminent distinction in the noble art of healing. His name was Charity, his actions Humanity, his intercourse with man Benevolence and Love. And they included his birth date of 1750, February 27th, 1750, and the day he died, which was January 29th, 1794.
How does this article help us understand the Revolutionary Era better?
Well, he, as I indicated, you know, there's a great deal of literature in terms of firsthand accounts of what happened at Valley Forge. But so in that sense, you know, Waldo's diary and poetry are not new. But I think, you know, he gives you a sense of some of the broader issues, the societal context that you wouldn't get, I think, from other accounts of that period by, or other eyewitness accounts from that period. And, you know, does so in a way that I think is particularly insightful and entertaining. And I think it's useful for, you know, a modern day audience to read something like that by a person of such a well-rounded, multi-talented individual who was not, you know, prominent in the revolution, certainly not to the general public today. But I think it, you know, enriches our sense of you know, what people were like, that there were remarkable, I think he was remarkable individuals like that, and they weren't necessarily, you know, well known. There were others besides the names that, you know, typically first come to our lips when we're talking about the revolution or the general or the Continental Army specifically. And he was clearly one of those those men, and I think that's what makes his diary and his poetry worth reading. In particular, I'm not suggesting that the other accounts are deficient in that way, but his, I think, were pretty remarkable.
David Price, thanks again.
Thank you, Brady. Pleasure to be with you again.
The music played in this episode included works by Kevin MacLeod and the Sturbridge Colonial Militia. Any unauthorized reproduction or use of this podcast without the express written permission of the Journal of the American Revolution is strictly prohibited. For everyone here at Dispatches, I'm Brady Kreitzer saying so long.